Larry Stibel. He is an executive in residence at Suffolk University. Homie spends 2 days a week at Suffolk, and the other three working at his organization, Stibel Peabody, doing career and leadership consulting. He's got his doctorate from Harvard, and he's going to be speaking to us about brain science and leadership.
Great.
Welcome, Larry.
Thank you very much. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You notice I've got a lapel mic. I'm recording this. This will pick up my voice. It's not going to pick up your voice. If anybody would like a copy of the MP3 of this talk, just give me your business cards. I'll give it to you. I'll also give it to the chapter if you want to post it. If anybody wants a copy of these PowerPoint slides, give me your business cards. I'll send them both to you. That's the topic. We're very much into evidence-based management. That's kind of a goofy thing to say to a room full of chief information officers. On the other hand, I'm sure you have seen, just like I have seen, people who are leaders who are very self-efficacious. That's a fancy word for saying they have full confidence in their abilities. To the exclusion of knowledge to the contrary. How many of you have seen that in action? And we see it's really part of the human condition, whether it's General Petraeus or it's Lehman Brothers. It's really the same thing. The lethal combination of self-efficacy and then not being open to information. So the banner that we fly under, we got this from healthcare. Anybody in healthcare? So you probably have heard ad nauseum, evidence-based medicine. So we're talking about evidence-based management. Based decisions on the basis of information, research, and data. And so I'm here to talk about three research pieces that might be of interest to you and the implications. These are my goals. One, to respect the power of three, be grateful, and then fake it until you become it. First, let's talk about the power of three. There are times in your career when you are given ambiguous questions. In a job interview or at a cocktail party, well, tell me about yourself, right? Or those of you who have your own businesses, why should I hire you? Everybody in this room has the experience of saying, okay, make a presentation to the CEO. Put something together. Finally, there's performance evaluation situations. You're going to sit down with somebody on your team and you're going to give them some feedback. How do you structure those ambiguous conversations? We're going to talk about the magic of the number three and the research why it is magic. First, let's go through a couple of things. For the Roman Catholics in the audience, when we pray to God, we pray to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Three. For the people of Jewish faith in the audience, when we speak of God, we talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Three. When I was a little kid, I liked the three little pigs. Of course, I liked three blind mice, too. And there was Goldilocks and the three bears. Let's not forget that. And then when I got a little older, I liked the three musketeers. And my favorite team was the three stooges. Of course, you've heard this expression. We know the world has three, we live in three dimensions. A play has three acts. How many of you have seen Harry Potter? Raise your hands. Harry Potter's not about Harry Potter, is it? It's about a team of three. The last scene, the last movie, there's three characters. Harry Potter is not about Harry Potter. The three episodes in Star Wars that I like the best is not about Luke. It's about a team of three. The favorite, the best movie that was ever created in all time. Three primary colors. Everything revolves around three. Any of the military people here? Anybody been in the military? When the military talks about the world, they talk about land, sea, and air. Three. The Eternal Triangle. Any writers in the room? The Eternal Triangle in fiction, in writing, is there are three core characters. There's the hero, there is somebody in distress, and then there's the villain. The things that we call plot twists are, by the end of when you get to the end, it turns out the person in distress is actually the villain. There's a reversal. But there's always three key characters in every drama. The question is, why? Why does number three come over and over again? Whether it's science, religion, art, three. Well, first, let's talk about the research. In the late 1950s, there was a psychologist at Harvard University named Miller, who experimented with the issue as what is the cognitive capability of human beings to assimilate new information. And what he did is he got a bunch of undergraduates, paid them some money to look at numbers and asked them to repeat the numbers by heart and all sorts of other stimuli. What's the biggest line? And they kept doing this and doing this. He came out with a classic book, classic article. The title of it is called The Magic Number 7 Plus or Minus 3. And this became how many of you remember this from Psychology 101? The magic number is 7 plus or minus 3. Sort of a classic. What he said was the human brain can assimilate about 7 bits of information. Some people can do up to 3, and some people as little as 7, 6, 4. And that was the article. It was on the base. Anybody from the telephone company or in the telecommunications industry here? It was on the basis of that article that when the telephone system was being redesigned, how many numbers are in the primary number? 7. Plus 3 for the area code gives you 10. And it was based on this research. Here's the problem with the research. Number one, he was using undergraduates. No, seriously, what are they thinking about? Sex, drugs, rock and roll, that's all they think about.
That's three.
Three. They don't have the same issues that adults have in terms of children and mortgage and careers. The second thing is that his research design was with numbers. How many numbers can you? Well, in the real world, data has emotional value. Sometimes it has no emotion attached to it, like the number 4. And sometimes a piece of data has a lot of information value. You know, by the way, Chris, your daughter was run over by a bus, but she's okay. You know, that's gonna. So what this person is, this is Nelson Cowan. And if any of you would like the complete article, I can email it to you. But what Nelson Cowan did was he subject adults, not college kids, and he gave them whole bunches of facts. Some of the facts were unemotional, but some of the facts were very emotional. How much could they remember? Well, what he found was the magic number 4 in short-term memory. He argues that the human brain is really built to absorb about 4 pieces of information. And my own experience is 4 is optimistic. I think 3 makes better sense. And then when you get to 3, that explains the theme. What is the implication of what I just said for you? Number one, if you're going to meet somebody for the first time and they say, tell me about yourself, try to think about 3 key things you want that person to remember about you. Don't tell them about 7 things. 2, if you're going to be making a presentation organize your presentation around three key themes. Look at the second slide in this in my slide deck. It says, I'm here to give you three issues. So I've organized this presentation around three themes. If you're going to be giving a performance evaluation to a subordinate, what are the three most important things that you want this person to remember? Use three as a guide for your presentations. So, I would like you to first think about one way that you could apply this idea in the next 7 days. And then I'm going to ask you to discuss it at the table. So think about one way you could apply the idea of three in the next 7 days. And now I'm going to give you some time to discuss it with each other on the table. So turn around and discuss it.
I did a presentation on budget planning for next year, and I called it defer, repeal, and replace as the three things.
But we always think there's three goals for the next year.
I like this, but you said you redesign everything in your company. Bring
it
down to three things.
Yeah. Three basic elements for company design. Software, hardware, and telecommunications.
Any questions? Does this make sense?
I've learned in the past that five is the number you should have for bullet points and slides, no more than five. I've also heard odd numbers are better than even numbers. Is that correct? Is this some truth?
I haven't heard anything about that, but I would say five is too many. Just I think three forces you to focus.
List of their tasks and what their different responsibilities are. Some of them had more than three, and some had less than three. So I think I'm going to try to make it
three. So I'm in transition, so when I brand myself, I have three key things that I have. One is that I'm bilingual, I spoke about the business. One is that I can organize anything, all levels of sales.
Does this make sense?
Yeah.
I give you 2 more minutes. I should give you 3 more minutes. I'll give you 3 minutes. Any questions? Okay.
No. I think of lots of examples.
Serving three items now at Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Good.
Right.
There's no framework that I think about. Did she talk about that?
She was talking more about making speeches. So the press corps speeches.
Okay, start to wrap it down.
We didn't hear your presentation, but we only have three tractions.
All right, why don't y'all stand up and stretch? Stand up and stretch. You've been sitting too long. Stand up and stretch. All right, now sit down. That's enough of that. You're having too much fun. So I ask you to stretch. And speaking of stretching muscles, I would like the next lesson is fake it until you become it.
No.
Fake it until you become it. We start with one of the world's classic plays, Hamlet by William Shakespeare. How many of you have ever seen it, read it? Okay. Hamlet is a story about faking it until you make it. Hamlet is really a story about what is truth and what is false. Hamlet is first confronted by a ghost, but he realizes it could be false. How does he get at the truth? The way he gets at the truth is by being false, by faking it. He first fakes that he is insane. The way he gets at the truth of the king's, his uncle's having been a murderer, is he writes a fake play and he has them act to it. So by faking it, he's getting to the truth. The climactic scene that I'm referring to tonight is the scene between Hamlet and his mother. Hamlet confronts his mother and says, "You were sleeping with the man who murdered my father." And she says, "You're right, I'm doing that. I'm nothing but a whore. What do I do, Hamlet? How do I stop it?" And Hamlet says, "Tomorrow, pretend you're not. And then the next day, pretend you're not. And then the next day, pretend you're not." So Hamlet is not saying, don't be a whore. He's saying, pretend you're not a whore. He's saying, fake it until you become it. You get to truth through fiction. We fake it until we make it. Anybody who's ever graduated from college and started their first job knows what I'm talking about. You really don't know what you're doing. You're just faking it, right? You think you're the imposter and said someday your boss is going to say, "I got you, you don't know what you're talking about." And then one day you stop worrying about it. Is that right?
Yeah.
We all fake it until we become it. So in that spirit, I'm going to cite this article, Counting Your Blessings Versus Burdens. It was done in 2003. Very simple experiment. The researcher got a number of people and put them into groups.
I think
two groups. One group was as many times as possible thank people and express gratitude. As often as you could, write how grateful that you are. And the other group just continued to do what you normally do. Then 6 months later, they evaluated the two groups. The people that actually expressed more gratitude became more grateful and more positive than people who didn't. The subordinates of the person who expressed gratitude more often saw the boss as more helpful and positive. They faked it until they became it. They were instructed to express thanks and gratitude. They did what they were told, and then they became grateful. Fake it until you become it. So the lesson to be learned is, when you get back to work tomorrow, start thanking people. Express gratitude for what they're doing. You may think in your mind, why am I thanking somebody for doing a job that they're paid for that they should be doing? Forget about it. Just do what I say and see what happens to you. Fake it until you become it. Remember, emotions are contagious. This is not, I say that as a psychologist. There's research. Emotions are contagious. You've all been in organizations, and you know what I'm talking about. Does everybody understand? How many have ever been understand about emotions being contagious? So if you are great, if you precipitate an emotional contagion of gratitude, others will catch it. Who's this guy? Colin Powell. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under George H.W. Bush, then Secretary of State under George W. Bush. There's a lovely scene that I saw on television where he talks about how he would get his nerve up if he was faced with hostile press, hostile Congress, hostile president. As a child, he loved a movie called The Hustler with Jackie Gleason and
Paul Newman.
Who's seen The Hustler? Okay, so there's the scene is Paul Newman's a young upstart against Jackie Gleason, and Jackie Gleason is playing a guy called Minnesota Fats. And Paul Newman's playing a character named Fast Eddie. And Jackie Gleason goes to the washroom and he washes his hands. And then he dries his hands, and then he says to Paul Newman, "Let's play some pool, Fast Eddie." And then he beats Paul Newman. And so what the general would do is he would go to the bathroom, he would wash his hands, and they would look at himself in the mirror and say, "Let's play some pool, Fast Eddie." And that's how he would get his courage up to deal with what he had to do. This is a wonderful piece of research, and there's also a YouTube program that you can watch, and I would urge you to watch the YouTube program. It's very dramatic. It's delightful. It's on the benefit of power posing before a high-stakes evaluation, and Your Body Language Shapes Who You Are by Amy Cuddy, who's a professor of social psychology at Harvard University. To get into this, who knows who this guy is? Cesar Millan. Cesar Millan ostensibly has a program called what? The Dog Whispers. Is he training dogs or is he training people? Dog Whispers is about training people. And what he's training people to do is what he calls calm, assertive leadership. What he's saying is that dogs are pack animals, and they will follow you if you have calm, assertive leadership. And the people that he's working with are either not assertive or they're not calm. And he's trying to teach people how to be calm, assertive leadership. Let's translate that into in physiology terms. Assertiveness would be higher levels of testosterone. Even females have testosterone, but higher levels of testosterone in the body. And associated with that, I think that's the wrong word. I put cortisone. I think it's cortical. Does anybody know what the right word is? But cortisone is secreted by the adrenal glands. It triggers energy. It triggers the fight flight. It gets the adrenaline going. Cortisone is the trigger for the adrenaline. When the adrenaline is in your body, you're ready to fight or flee. And it would contribute to stress. So what Cesar Millan is teaching in a physiological sense is high level of testosterone, low level of cortisol in your body. How do you do that? How does one stimulate that? Well, according to Professor Cuddy, it's easy. All you have to do is pose. Fake it until you become it. What she did, simple study, was she had a bunch of Harvard Business School students. She took a base saliva sample from them. She measured levels of cortisol and she measured measures of testosterone, males and females. Then he had some of them engage in power posing. This is an example of a power pose. How many of you are familiar with this? It turns out even blind people, if they're in one of those, you know, athletic events and they win, they will go, they will do this. This is innate. If you look at orangutans, if you look at monkeys, if they achieve something, they will do this. Head straight, and they're making their bodies bigger than they are. Another power pose is hands behind your neck, feet on the table, making yourself big. Here's, compare that to this, right? Trying to make myself as small as possible. Yeah, there you go. Well, she had these students do it for 2 minutes, power posing for 2 minutes. After 2 minutes, she then took another saliva sample, measured cortisol levels and testosterone levels. Guess what? 2 minutes of power posing and testosterone level is up, cortisol level is down. 2 minutes of this, cortisol level is down, cortisol level is up, testosterone level is down. That's what she found. So, next day, I'm on a sales call. How many of you do sales? Okay. When I go on a sales call, I usually show up 20 to 30 minutes before the scheduled meeting. And I'm going to park in the parking lot. I'm going to walk in the door exactly on time. But I've got 15 to 20 minutes to play. So how many are in that situation? Here's what I do. I take out my iPhone and I start checking my emails. How many of you do that? Here's what it looks like. You're hunched over with the iPhone, and you're making your body small. Your arms are like this, and you're going like this. I say, wait a second. According to Professor Cuddy, I'm now increasing my levels of cortisol, decreasing my levels of testosterone, and then going in for a sales call. That doesn't make sense. So I put my iPhone away, walked in the building, went to the president's office. I said, do you mind if I use the bathroom? Sure. So there's the bathroom. Nobody's in the bathroom. And I'm gone. I was so fearful that somebody would walk in and say, if this is his reaction because he can pee in a pot, I don't want... I go to the president's office. I was there for a potential coaching assignment with one person. He asks me what my fee is. I told him 20% more than what I was planning to ask for. And I walked away with 5 coaching assignments. And the whole idea of raising my prices 20%, I wasn't thinking about that at all until... And I didn't even associate that with what I was doing, but it happened. Why would that happen? Well, it's very simple. If we assume that the human body is a system and not separate things, but the system is everything relates to everything else, then wouldn't it be natural that if I physically set up my muscles in a certain way, that sends a signal to my brain. My brain then sends a signal to my hormone levels. Voila. Isn't that what we tell our subordinates? Don't think in narrow functional areas, think in terms of the total business. Don't think this way, think this way. Our bodies are the same. Why would it be any different? She did another piece of research. She had Harvard Business School students do a power position. A powerless position, and then go in and do a mock job interview. The mock job interview was then videotaped, given to a panel of people who didn't know who these people were, and those people that had used power positions were significantly more likely to be hired than those people that weren't. Fake it till you make it. Again, why would it work? because the human body is one system. You change any part of the system, you can do it. And any of you could do a power pose and begin to change your endocrine level and your testosterone level. So, to summarize, there are three lessons for tonight. Lesson number one, respect the power of three. Lesson number two, be grateful and do it often. And lesson number three, use your body to fake it until you become it. Again, if you'd like a copy of the presentation, just give me your business cards, I'll be glad to give it to you. Any questions, reactions, comments? Anybody? Any of you see how this might apply in your own lives?
Before I ask you a question.
Before I give an answer.
Larry, I guess as you were talking, yeah. I was thinking about one of the traits that people always say is an essential characteristic of successful leaders is authenticity.
Yep.
So I was struggling a little bit with the fake it piece. But I think the connection I was making is that it is real, that the physiological piece actually does contribute in an authentic way to your feeling of confidence or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about how you see this in that authentic style?
Well, I think that's why I was talking about Hamlet. Because Hamlet is about lies. Hamlet's pretending he's crazy when he's not crazy. Hamlet is telling his mother to pretend. Hamlet uses a play to unmask what is truth and what is lies. George Burns of George Burns and Gracie Allen fame once said, "There's nothing as important as being genuine. If you can fake that, you really got it made." And the lesson that I have tonight is he's right. In the beginning, you will fake it. In the end, you will become it.
So when you say fake it, I'm not hearing fake it. What I'm hearing is the mental equivalent to visualization in sports. So be the ball.
Yeah.
Know what you're going to do. Understand exactly how you're going to move through that high jump if that's what you're doing. And this is really kind of the mental equivalent of that.
It is the mental equivalent of that. It is like calisthenics. But I'm also saying fake it. Again, the issue about expressing gratitude. If you try this out tomorrow morning, you may actually feel a sense of artificiality about the entire thing. You may be expressing gratitude to a secretary for work that you don't feel like you should be expressing gratitude to, and you're only doing this because you're trying to see this if this does anything. In that sense, it's artificial and it is phony. But the issue is, does it work?
There's a good book out there, I think, called The Secret. And the premise of The Secret, or the outcome of it is the saying is, what you think about, you bring about. And I think it's the same exact concept that you're talking about in a slightly more, I'll say, sincere way, maybe, if you have trouble with the word fake. But it does work, I believe, and it has a lot to do with what Michael's talking about as well, with visualizing. You start to take small steps subconsciously toward whatever it is you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same principle, but what you think about, you bring about.
That's right. Henry Ford once said it best, if you think you will succeed, you're right. If you think you will fail, you are right.
Maybe similar to courage is not the absence of fear, but having fear and moving forward anyway.
Oh, absolutely. You know, any rational soldier in war will say, you know, it wasn't courage. You know, I was just doing what I was instructed to do, and I did it despite my better judgment. Yeah. My better judgment is to hide under the table.
Well, along your idea of power positions, I was given a piece of advice years ago that I use, and it's incredibly successful. If I'm on an important phone call,
mm-hmm.
I'll do it standing up.
Absolutely.
And if I have headphones on, I'll be gesturing.
Anyone who walked by my office would think I was nuts because I'm standing there going like this.
Absolutely.
But people feel the energy over the phone.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Anytime you got an important call, and we say this particularly to people who are in job search status, never sit down. Always be standing up. Even we would also suggest you smile while you're talking. And the reason I would suggest you smile while you're talking is because you're actually tightening up your vocal cords. And physically, that's all you're doing. You're tightening up the vocal cords. But the person on the other end of the line is going to hear more energy and excitement. You're also absolutely right about the gestures. You know, use your hands. Liberally use magic words. Exciting, thrilling, vibrant, enthusiastic. I'm really up for that. Again, the person on the other end of the line doesn't know who you are, but they're making assessments about your personality based on extremely limited data, and then they're generalizing it. So it's important for you to control that process. And absolutely, positively, do not sit in the sofa. Because what will happen is you'll be very relaxed. You won't be using your arms. You won't be saying vibrant words. And you'll come across very soft and mellow. And the person will make certain attributions about that. It's called stagecraft. And leadership is a performance art.
So I like evidence-based management, and I like three, even though Stephen Covey said there's seven habits.
Yeah.
But the evidence that you gave us said four.
The
evidence do you have for three?
None. I made that up. Now you want consistency?
What if you don't have stage fright and you have so much energy, even though you're an old man of 56, how do you bring it down so you don't sound too way out there?
Your whole life is a power position.
Well, that's all.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yours. He's faking it really good. No, but seriously, years ago.
Story now.
No, just a quick one.
Yeah, no.
In graduate school, my old speech professor told me, you should go work out, lift weights, go for a run. Then come in speech because you got too much energy. Most people got to build their, endorphins or whatever to get them up there to do it. What do you do when you're the opposite? I'm Italian. Using hands is so easy for me. I got to hold them back. What do you do to bring it down a notch to make it more?
Sit in your car with your
do emails.
Well,
sort of
I think your professor was giving you good advice. One is work out, get physical, that's number one. Number two, if Professor Cuddy is correct, then doing that will lower things. My own recommendation based on knowing you for 20 seconds is don't be other than who you are. And the best way you can do, there's a process called inoculation. An inoculation is you introduce a concept so the person understands where you're coming from. So when they actually see the virus or the germ, they say, oh yeah, I've seen this before. And your issue is to say, look, I'm Italian. The good news is I'm Italian. And the bad news is I use my hands. And I'm emotional. So you've introduced the concept so that you have directed them to what conclusions they're going to draw from your emotionality and the use of the hands. Oh yeah, he's Italian. He told me he was Italian. That's inoculation. If you don't do that, then what happens is people will draw conclusions that may be different than what you wanted them to draw. You've lost control. In other words, he's got a loud voice. He uses his hands. He's a big guy. He must be overbearing. I could make that conclusion. You gave me the room to do that by not framing it at the beginning of the relationship. You know, good news I'm Italian, bad news I'm Italian. This is what Italians do. I think people, once you, and that's called inoculation. You introduce it.
I want to keep the passion just taming.
Well, I would say don't.
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 Okay.
But just frame it. So frame it in a way that you control it.
Okay.
You inoculated the whole room, by the way, you brought the subject up, because it was obvious from the moment you spoke that you were asking, and the fact that you were asking, how do you take it down a notch? Yeah. You inoculated the whole room, because we all knew immediately, this guy's up, he wants to take it down. Now we all just know that's part of you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to fake it. You know, that's just, okay.
That's right.
Own it.
Sir.
Is there any evidence that our brains could adapt to the multi-threaded environment we're living in now?
You know, the answer to that question is I don't know, and it's a very good question, but the answer is I don't know. I don't know the research on that, so I don't want to fake it.
I have seen some articles that say that regardless of the fact that we all say that we're very good at multitasking, the reality is that almost none of us are good at multitasking.
Right. there is significant research on that, and that is and particularly young people tend to think that they're very good at multitasking, and the brain really is not designed for that. The brain is really designed for multitasking at a conscious and an unconscious level. So you could be watching me, you could be listening to me, then there's another part of your brain that is simultaneously regulating your breathing and your heart, and you don't have to be aware of it. That's multitasking. Your brain's already doing that. But at a cognitive level, no. One thing at a time. So we tend to think we can do it well, and the answer is we don't. Anybody else? Yes?
I'm forgetting where I read this, but it was talking about, you know, if you're trying with a group to say, I'm trying to instill the right attitude in my
yep.
kind of thing, it's a recognition that you can't really instill attitudes, but what you can do is suggest behaviors, and if you get the right behaviors, the attitudes will follow.
Oh, absolutely.
And that kind of fits the
absolutely. My framework is very much cognitive behavioral. You can't change people's feelings. You can't change people's personalities. You can change what they do. And then that affects how they feel about themselves and how other people feel. And then, and again, the power posing is a perfect example of that. It's much, you know, because you're dealing with a complex system, where are you going to intervene in the complex system? The answer is intervene in the easiest place. It's easier to influence the posing than the feelings. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, you got my card.
That was good. I want to thank Larry. I wanted to, we will post your,